This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. We've recently come through, at least part of the way, a political moment that was unprecedented, at least unprecedented, in that it was a battle over raising the debt ceiling that sent both sides of the aisle at each other. Has this ever sort of happened before? Well, you know who we're going to call on, our history doctor, Bill Smith. Bill, welcome back.
Well, of course, it's shocking, news that politicians would accuse each other of things such as underhandedness, sneakiness, or being the fault of the end of Western civilization. I'm watching with some amusement these accusations passed back and forth over the recent showdown on the debt ceiling, particularly when John Kerry and others called it a Tea Party tax hike via inflation. We've talked at some length about how the Tea Party movement isn't anything new in America, just a little forgotten from our collective memories, like the Mugwumps and the Know-Nothings and the Populists and other great movements. But from the time, not very far away from the Don't Tread on Me flag that became so popular with the Tea Party folks right now, I'm reminded of an election where the doctrinaires took a good candidate down.
Well, according to political observers, that could be happening at this very moment. The Tea Party precedent being...
Well, of course, I'm thinking of the High Federalists from the election of 1800.
The High Federalists. Of course. I knew that's what you were going to say. Of when?
1800.
Okay, that's going back a ways. The country's about 25 years old at that point.
Yes, but there's some really interesting facts.
I trust you.
When you look at the people saying, well, the Tea Party is steering the Republican Party off the edge and candidates won't be able to succeed, good people will be taken down by ideology. Well, none other than Alexander Hamilton, the Newt Gingrich of his day, as it were, unelectable, not only his overly intellectual policy being the stumbling block, the more significant thing being that, of course, he was a bastard child of the Caribbean, not born in America. Therefore, Hamilton always wanted to be the intellectual backbone of others that he could not achieve on his own, a founding father who could never hold the mantle. But rather than back John Adams, a Federalist that Hamilton did not think hewed the ideological line that he had sufficiently, particularly when it came to how the Treasury should be managed. So the former Treasury Secretary would push Charles Pinckney of South Carolina into the race, effectively splitting the party and sufficiently opening the way for Thomas Jefferson.
So in their own way, the GOP Tea Party possible tiff in the straw poll in Iowa this summer and what might happen between factions of the Republican Party isn't unprecedented.
No, not at all. You see this over and over and over in American political history. We'll just stick with our 1800 analogy. That election ended up becoming the one that was dominated by too smart by half political fiascos. This is also before the 12th Amendment, which fixed the problem that we're going to have in the 1800 election. You see, the electors in the Electoral College could vote separately. They had two votes, one for president, one for vice president.
That's right.
So to rid themselves of Hamilton's man Pinckney, many Federalists used one of their two votes to vote for John Jay. The Republicans that were backing Jefferson had a similar plan, but they didn't use it. And they instead used all their votes for the slate of Jefferson and Aaron Burr. The problem was, in using all their votes for the slate of Jefferson and Aaron Burr, this resulted in an Electoral College tie of 73 votes each. Now the outgoing House, which is controlled by the Federalists, has the chance to decide which of the Republicans, Burr or Jefferson, would be president, which one would be vice president.
Boy, what would MSNBC, CNN, or Fox have done with this situation?
Oh, my. if you enjoyed Florida in 2000, you'd love the election of 1800.
It went on and on.
It took 36 ballots before Jefferson got enough of the states. Remember, when it goes to the House, you're voting by state. Hamilton said at one point that Jefferson was the less dangerous alternative to Burr. And although it worked to he worked hard to reverse that later, especially when the contest got in the House, it proved to be an assessment that came back to haunt.
Politics is often personal, especially when you're in the heat of the battle. Tim Pawlenty left the Republican Party, or the race for the Republican nomination, right after the Iowa straw poll. Rick Perry, Texas governor, joined. And Michelle Bachmann has been kind of at battle with both of them, as you would expect during a primary race. Is this just the American political landscape?
Well, it is.
You're playing for very high stakes.
They're playing for high stakes. And, you know, again, Burr and Hamilton had their feuds as well, although it literally ended up in one.
Literally a feud, yes.
Let's look back here. Again, you've got Hamilton, who backed up his 1800 election cycle comment regarding Burr, adding in 1804 that he still had the most despicable opinion of Burr. Burr now having been dropped as the vice presidential spot by Jefferson, failing to win the governorship of New York, feels that his reputation has been so sullied by this comment that he asks for an explanation from Hamilton, and Hamilton reportedly replies with a dissertation on the various meanings of what despicable is. Obviously, this did not satisfy Mr. Burr, and he asked for satisfaction on the field of honor.
This is the Vice President of the United States, by the way.
Well, yes, outgoing.
Yes,
because
nevertheless.
Nevertheless.
Yes.
You have the Vice President of the United States challenging to duel the former Secretary of the Treasury.
Yes. A cabinet member and the vice president.
Yes.
Okay.
Which, again, if you're thinking about fill-in-the-blank vice president now and any fight they may have had with anybody else in the last few cycles, no one has resulted to a duel. Now, since dueling was illegal in New York, the pair went to Weehawken, New Jersey, where Burr mortally wounded Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Now, we can't overlook the fact that Hamilton had tried to rig the duel by bringing hair-trigger pistols. But his aim was poor. He missed. Burr hit. Hamilton is dead. Mm-hmm. Of course, Burr eventually ended up in Louisiana, enmeshed in a conspiracy against the government. But that's another story for another time.
So until we pick up the Aaron Burr story,
we're history.